Okay, well, I guess we'll get started. Hello and welcome, and thank you so much for persevering to the third day of the conference and coming out at this time in the morning. We are convening our own session, so I'll do the introductions. My name is Sarah Koish. I'm the e-learning librarian at York University, and my partner in crime here today is Bill Denton. He's the web learning librarian, web librarian, not learning. We're going to be talking about our course management system and our student portal. So let's just get started, because I know we're a couple minutes late, but we are able to get an internet connection in here, so we'll be able to actually go in and show you some examples. So our plan for today is to quickly go over what a course management system is. But before we start, can I just have a show of hands of people in an academic library here? Okay. How about public libraries? Okay, good. And our school librarians? Okay, that's interesting, because they are starting to use Moodle in Toronto District School Board, at least, that I am aware of. So that's interesting. We hopefully if there's future presentations on this topic, they will also come in and have a look. And who has a CMS here? Who's a course manager? And who has a portal? Okay, so a few of you, great. The nice thing today is we're going to be able to get a sneak peek at something that's usually password protected and it's not readily available. So you'll be able to see sort of what we're doing and get some ideas that you hopefully can take back home with you. So we'll just, for those of you who are maybe not familiar and don't have your own course management system or portal, we're going to define it, give you some examples so that you can relate a little bit more to it. We're going to talk about why we would include library content in these environments, how we went about doing this, and how and what we came across. We're going to talk a little bit about what we would include and why we would include it. We have some results, qualitative and quantitative results. Now, this was not a formal survey or anything like that. This is just a little bit more of a show and tell and some feedback that we got. And then we'll talk about some next steps and what we hope to do. And we have a few questions for you, actually. So let's get started. So a course management system, now just to clarify here, I'm not talking about a content management system, which I know many of you also have at your libraries, but we're talking about a course management system, which can be defined as a web application, meaning it's just basically run on a server, that can be accessed by a web browser. It's a very simple definition. It provides a suite of software usually organized around a course or a unit, and it gives educators tools to create a course website very easily without knowing HTML or anything like that. And they can provide access control, so it can be only open to students that are enrolled, or if they choose to, they could actually open it to the general public as well. Some common features that are included is the ability to organize and present content, so it has a web editor to which enables you also to upload files. You can communicate synchronously or asynchronously with your students through chat, email, discussion tools such as forums. You can assess student performance, and it has tracking features usually embedded, so you can see how many times a particular student accessed the site, what did they access, how long did they stay there, and it's very, very interesting to have a look at that. You can also record and report grades, and we're actually going to be incorporating it into our grade booking system as well, so it'd be a very seamless way for faculty members to assess their students and just send that right off. And then you can also manage class materials and activities. And different faculty members will use it at different levels. Some of them will use it exclusively for online distance learning, so they might not have any face-to-face, they put everything into the course management system. Or it could be used as a hybrid, so it might be used for posting materials or for further readings and that kind of thing. And then some faculty members might just use it at the very beginning just to have the course outline and that kind of thing up there. So it can be used in many different ways. And this is a course management systems come by many other different names. So I thought I would just put them up for you there so that if you hadn't heard of it or referred to something else. In Wikipedia, it's usually it's actually indexed as a virtual learning environment, and then that's where you would find the actual definitions. In the United States, they usually refer to them as learning management systems, so it's another term you might hear in the literature. And in the UK, they tend to refer it to as a virtual learning environment. So those are the ones that you probably will see the most. And there is a wide variety of them that have been developed. WebCT, can I see a show of hands of people that are using WebCT right now? And Blackboard? Anybody on Prometheus? No? How about Course Tools? No? Sakai? Okay, what? Learning Space? Desire to Learn? Okay, so we have a few people on that one. Angel? And then Moodle? Okay, great. We're using Moodle at York because it is an open source system, and it's free, but obviously nothing comes out without a cost. So there was a lot of building that had to go on when we switched from WebCT over to the open source environment. But people are very happy with the switch, and we see a large number of adoptees at this point, and it keeps on increasing. Moodle is, there I gave you the definition, Modular Object Oriented Dynamic Learning Environment. That's what it stands for, because it kind of sounds like a funny name. And I did check up the OED definition of Moodle is to dawdle aimlessly, to idle away. So there you go, you can spend a lot of time in there. And it was developed by Australian programmer Martin DeGiamis, and he felt that it was important to build the CMS from an educational point of view to help with the educational process. So it wasn't something developed to be used in business or anything like that. He now works on Moodle full time, so it's something that's constantly being improved, constantly being developed. So it's not one of those projects that people worked on and then dropped. So that's one of the nice things about it. He refers to Moodle as a CMS as opposed to an LMS, and the reason for that is because it's based on social constructivist pedagogy, which basically means he feels that learning is best facilitated when one constructs knowledge from interacting with one's environment and then sharing these thoughts and ideas with others. So that's sort of the basic premise of Moodle. And this is just, I just took this off of the website last night, and this is the most current numbers. And we see that there's a lot, close to 3 million courses being offered around the world, 210 countries. I think that's pretty close to almost, well, not all countries, but a huge number. We see that the number of teachers is close to 2 million. So you can see it's constantly growing. So it's something that's being adopted and consistently used. So we're happy to be involved in a project like this. Now I'm going to switch you over to Bill, and he's going to talk about portals. And actually, I wasn't supposed to show you that slide yet.
Thanks, Sarah. I saw just three or four people have put up their hands and said that they have a portal at their at the university. But how many people customize their Google homepage? Just a few, or some sort of Yahoo homepage or something like that. Because that is a portal. That's an example of a portal, a really popular, easy to use one. It brings together all sorts of different kinds of information from different sources onto one web page. So it's all there, easy to get to. You don't have to go off to all these individual places to see that content. And here, this is just a simple one that I've got a couple of blog feeds in those boxes on the left. The Toronto weather, kind of moon phase, a video game that I like to play. You can see the over on the left at the top is a little home tab, and you can add in new tabs there, so you can organize all of the different clumps of information into different tabs. You can also include finance information or sports scores or celebrity gossip or quotes of the day, pictures of the day, links to favorite things, anything like that. The little boxes there are portlets. This whole thing is a portal, and those are portlets. And here, and in most portals, the whole thing is quite customizable. You can drag those things around, rearrange, put one on top of the other, move one under the other, make one two columns wide, make them one column wide. Now, Now, there are lots of portals are very big in the corporate world, and all of the big software companies make them. IBM, Oracle, Microsoft. There's some smaller companies like Liferay and Vignette. They're used for a lot for business to business, business to customer, corporate customers of telecommunications companies would have them. Of the three or four people that put their hands up, they have portals at their place. What are you using?
PeopleSoft?
Yeah. Yeah, Martha.
Actually, yeah, we're moving the Sun system, and it's an enterprise system, the IT service and stuff.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, university wide.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different definitions of portals. This is from IBM. It's that web portals allow partners, employees, and customers to choose their user experience with personalized applications, those little portals, based on role, context, actions, location, preferences, and team collaboration needs. And you can imagine changing this to apply to students in an educational institute. That you could say it allows students, teachers, faculty, and staff to choose your user experience, et cetera, et cetera. And so you can think for a student portal, it's something that brings together into one place all of the frequently used links and information that students need. Course information, like what courses they're registered for, what classrooms they should be in, when their exams are, if they want to add a new course, if they want to drop a course, program registration, signing up for particular programs, graduation requirements, have they met them, financial information, how their tuition is, do they owe money, do they have to pay money if grants and loans come in, are there news and alerts from the institution that important stuff. Has a class been canceled that night? Is there a weather alert? Events listings, things that are going on, academic stuff, popular stuff, and of course the library information, which is what I'll be talking about later. I've got a couple of samples of portals. Again, like the course management systems, it's hard to see other people's portals because they're protected behind logins. So this is from the University of Montreal. This is what theirs looks like. Probably looks a bit small. There isn't a library tab here, but there's an information technology link over on the left that will get you into some of the library content. And this is McGill's portal. This is actually their faculty portal, not the student portal. I got the screenshot from Amy Buckland. And you can see over on the right-hand side, too, we've got lots of portlets there, some maximized, some minimized. Over on the right-hand side, you can see that red box is the top of the library portlet. And above it, you can see there's a library account tab. So you could she could go in there and see her library information. The portal that we're using, the portal software that we're using at York is Liferay. And it is, it's open source, as it said, leading provider of open source enterprise portal and social collaboration software. They've got two versions. They have a standard edition that you can just download and install and try it out if you want. The other one is a more, comes with support and technical services. And it isn't open source, it seems, but we have access to the tech support, technical support from them, and technical support. Liferay, the company, they sell professional services, and we hired them to do some of the work when we were getting things set up. There were about a dozen people in the university IT department who were working for about a year getting it going, and they hired some people from Liferay to help out with it and get things integrated. Now I'll hand things back to Sarah.
So the question is, why would we include library content in these environments? And we know that basically students are confused very easily with the amount of resources that we have available through our libraries, our websites, and we have access to a huge amount of resources. These could be print, electronic, books, citation databases, full text databases, electronic reserves, and the list goes on, which can be quite confusing and overwhelming. And it's so students find it sometimes to be difficult to find information for their courses. And so what do? They turn to Google. And so we're trying to include library content in these environments that is specific to students who are enrolled in specific courses. And one of the benefits of using a CMS such as Moodle is that they can access this information all in one web location. They don't have to go to the library's website. They can stay within the portal, or they can stay within the CMS and continue to do their work. So it's working side by side with them. And in this way, we're actually bringing the library to the student, and we're not making them come to us at all times. And as we heard from Joseph James in his address earlier, at the very beginning of the conference, he actually talked about this, that we actually are really risking marginalization if we aren't going out into the online environments that students are using. And I think we also have to be selective about those environments. Maybe Facebook isn't really where they need it, but we've done a little bit of research and survey and find that, well, if it's an academic environment, then they want all the academic resources all in that one spot. So that's sort of our philosophy behind it. You're also able to push relevant library resources right out into individual courses if something's not being used, or if a professor really wants students to use social science abstracts or something like that, you can really make sure that it's right there, right when they need it, right when the course, when that assignment is being posted and that kind of thing. It maximizes the usage of library resources so that they're not going to Google and not using our resources, and so it pushes that stuff out to them. And it extends information literacy beyond one class session. I'll be talking about that a little bit later, about how us as librarians, we can actually maximize our use of the course management systems and portals so that we are pushing our specific subject information out to the students and making sure that it's available to them when at that time, at that point of need that they want to be using it. So how did we go about accomplishing this? And I thought, well, just give you a little bit of background about York University. I'm sure many of you know some of this information already, but we just turned 50 in May, so we're quite young in terms of university years, I guess you could say. We have about 50,000 students, though, so we're quite big, and 7,000 staff and faculty. We have primarily undergraduate programs, but we're growing in our graduate programs as well, and that's a real push at York. And we have two campuses, and you might not have realized this. We have a Keele campus, which is the big one with the concrete, and we have a beautiful Glendon campus. I'm going to show you a picture now. This is my home. I'm at the Frost Library, which is located in the Glendon campus, which is our bilingual campus. And we do have the beautiful Rose Gardens and the old mansion. We only serve about 2,000 students at this campus, but it was the original campus, so we have that to be proud of. And I'm going to show you Bill's home. Bill's at Bronfman Library. That's in the Schulich building. It's only about 5 years old, so it's very nice and sleek and beautiful. It's a new building, and the library actually occupies about 10% of the building, so it's quite large. And they're a little bit, Bronfman actually is a little bit unusual because it has half graduate students and half undergrads, so it's a little bit, they have quite heavily intense research resources provided there. So, how do we go about including library content in a CMS? And these are just my points, just after going through the whole process myself, and these are things I wish somebody would have told me in the beginning. Become familiar with your CMS, attend all the workshops you can, and really dive into it. Make sure you know what all the little portlets do, how to move them around, how to even if you have a little bit of HTML background, to have a look at it, because that can always help, just if there's a couple little tweaking things that you want to do with spacing and that kind of thing. Collaborate with centers. We have a support for teaching center, and we have a faculty support center. So those are the ones that are going to be involved in the implementation of a CMS or a portal. So make sure that you are on good terms with them, you know what's happening, and that you're there at the table. Develop materials you'd like to include in a test course. This is really important. Even if you don't have one, start thinking about what you want to include, have it mocked up, and so that you can go, and here's what I'd like to have included, right at that first meeting. That way that people have an idea and they don't sort of just push you off to the side and say, well, that's not really that important. But if they can visually see it right away and say, oh, actually, yeah, that would be really neat if I could have my library account in there, or I could search the catalog directly in the CMS. Communicate frequently with the implementing staff, because they will forget you if you are not constantly knocking at their door. So because they have so many other things that they're trying to be doing at the same time, they just want to make sure that it works. So make sure that you're communicating with them. Put in place evaluation and getting feedback at the beginning. It's hard to do, and I didn't do it very well. But for the next year, we are going to be including it. Offer your resources to faculty who are creating new courses or who already have courses in the CMS. Oftentimes they'll come to me and say, well, I don't know how do you do this, Sarah? How do I do that? And it has nothing to do with library content, but I can easily do it. It takes 2 seconds, and then I can say, and by the way, I can include this very nice library box, or oh, and I see you have this assignment that involves students writing an annotated bibliography. We have some really great PowerPoint slides that you can include there so that students can see how to do it right in that environment. Collaborate with liaison librarians who tend to be early adopters of technology, because they're the ones who will be charged up, enthusiastic, and be wanting to sort of run with this idea. And they're the ones that are going to have those early successes that you can then bring to the larger environment. And again, advocate for your services. You have to be constantly saying, and I can help here, and I can help there. And you'll find that it sort of gets entrenched, and you'll be the go-to person for those kinds of questions. What to include? This is another question that you have to think about. In the literature, they talk about two different levels, the macro level and the micro level. Basically, all this means is that the macro level is talking sort of at the larger picture, including library resources in the actual shell. And I'm actually going to go in. You can see my. I don't want to end show. Let's just go right in here. So this is Moodle at York here, and I've just signed in. And so we're talking about the macro level. This is macro level here. This is where the first page where students see information, and you'll see on the left hand side we have the library resources by subject, and it's a huge long list just because I'm in so many different courses. But students would only see 4 or 5 of those, and then the library page is a little bit further down. And usually it's not laid out like this, quite like this, but you can see it's right included right on that main page. Just back. And you can have library presence in all course sites, so this would be a static box that doesn't change. And you can also include a library tab. I know Blackboard, it's a little bit more tab kind of structured, so you can have that as well. And the micro level is looking at specific courses for specific resources for specific courses, for specific assignments, that annotated bibliography, and putting those PowerPoint slides right in there. The chat forum for library questions, you could have, I'll say to faculty members, if you want to just set up a forum so that if students have questions about the research assignment, they can ask me rather than asking the faculty member if it's something that they need help with research. If it's a forum, the students are able to see that question and see my answer so that they're not asking the same question all the time. And the nice thing is that they can actually have that pushed out to their email, so they'll get that update as well if they so choose. And you can also, another idea is holding virtual office hours. So as a librarian, you can actually be in a course and say, well, I'm going to be available. I know we had our session last night. I'll be available on Tuesday and Thursday from, 6 to 7 to answer any more questions that you might have on how to do research on a specific topic. What do we have in our own macro presence? And actually, I'm just going to go right here to a screenshot of it. So that was that one box that I showed you. We have a link to the library homepage, so you can get that right away. A library catalog search box, e-resources, so that students can quickly find articles, an online tutorial, and I'm going to show you that in a few minutes what that looks like. We have a link to ULearn, which is a gateway to resources that were brought together by faculty members that they say these are the most important resources students need to get through university. So we put that right up front. We have our library account information available, reserves, because they always need to go to the reserves, and library accessibility services. And that was one of them that we actually added not too long ago, because faculty members, they have to address those issues in their class. And rather than having to address it individually, it's nice to have it in all courses. So if the student feels that they need it, they can go to it, but they don't have to. They don't have to be singled out by a faculty member. And our chat librarian service as well. And then this is the other box that we have. And I know it's really long because I was just using myself as the example. But here we have guides for students. And this is being fed through an RSS feed. And Bill, a little bit later, is going to explain the real intricacies on how we went about doing this. Because we also use it in the portal. But basically, it provides students with the subject research guides, which are our guides that the librarian, liaison librarians put together for particular subject areas. So if you are enrolled in social sciences, you're going to see the social science research guide. And it's based on the courses that you're enrolled in. So if a student, obviously I'm enrolled in all these different topics, and I'll see all of the different subject research guides on this macro view. So we actually haven't gone into a course yet. We're just on that initial page. And the library course was that one element on the list there that I have to explain a little bit more, because it's actually a course that all students are enrolled in. So all students will see that they are enrolled in the library course. It's not really a course. It's simply, this is what it looks like. I know it looks kind of bunched up, but I tried to get the whole picture of it. And basically what it is that we've highlighted all of the online resources and elements that we feel that students need to be able to do research in the library. So they can go through this. So if they need to, if they know that they, I'll go right into it right now. If they know that they want, so scroll down here. So here's our online tutorial, our library course. They would also see it in their list of courses. So if they know, I need help with searching the library catalog. So they can click on that. And this is actually a Camtasia quick video on how to search the library catalog. So it's about 45 or you can see it's 3 minutes long, and it just goes through those steps. And I didn't develop this, so I cannot take credit for it, but one of our great librarians, Elo, she worked on all these. And so we were able to include them, and so students can quickly find out that information without having to actually go into the library at that point to do it. And then we also have the box in French as well, because we have French courses, so we'll put the box in French as well for those students as well. And in our micro presence, so once you actually go into a course, we have the core library box as well, the subject research guides are set in, we have citation guides, e-reserves, all that kind of thing. So I'll show you what that kind of looks like. I know it's kind of hard to see, but we have it, often times I'll go into a course and a faculty member will say, well, I really want them to know how to use RefWorks. So we'll put in a RefWorks box with reference information. I really want them to know how to create a bibliography, because I have to do that for an APA documentation style, so you can put that in. So you can highlight those links that students will need. And the nice thing about it is that they're links, so if you want to update it, you can always go back to the library webpage and update it but the links will stay current actually in Moodle. So that becomes quite helpful. And so, and they have it on the two different sides. You can rearrange the boxes however you want, but it just gives those students that information that that faculty member thinks that they particularly need. And here's another example of a micro presence. And actually, this is Elo Mamet. She's here in the room today. Elo, can you wave, please? Because you might want to talk to her afterwards. And I'm only doing this. She knows. I told her I'd do that. But Elo was one of our early adopters, and she actually goes into the Bio 3100 course for three different sessions, or four now, I think, and does some very in-depth teaching about how to use biology resources. So rather than, and her faculty member didn't have a course in Moodle at all. So she said, well, can I put one up? And he said, sure, no, not a problem. So she was actually just able to activate it herself. And because it automatically enrolls all the students, she was able then to post all of her information, and the students could go there, use it as they needed. And they really, you'll see I have some data, but they liked this environment. They liked having everything brought together for them. They didn't have to navigate the whole library's website all the time just to pull out those particular things that Elo was highlighting for very specific biology resources. So this was a really great experiment, and I encourage you, if your faculty members aren't maybe using it as much, you can actually go in and do it yourselves. And then another micro presence that we include are the library's resources by subject. Now, this is a political science course, therefore the political science guide is gonna come up. So that's the only one that would come up. If it's we have some interdisciplinary courses as well. So if it's interdisciplinary, we've crossed cataloged them, I guess you could say, so that they'll also two or three may show. But that's a specific subject research guide for that course. Whereas on the macro presence, you saw the whole list of them. So that was for all of the courses. And just a little bit of feedback as to how it's been going at York. My advice is put it in place at the beginning, so make sure you know what information you want to gather. This is just so you can see a graph of the actual library course. So students tend to use it September, October, November, drops off after that, and then spikes again in the second half of the year. So we know students are using it, we can see that they're using it, and that they what time of year is particularly applicable for them. And this is just a little graph for the biology resources for ELO's course. And this is sort of like what we wanted to know, how often students were accessing it. And so they would occasionally check it when they needed to and go back, refer back to it, which was good. That's what we wanted to find out. We wanted to make sure that they were actually using it, and they were. Question, Elo?
Could I just mention that
sure.
The professor had his own website for
yes.
That course as well, and so the students were only accessing it for the library pieces, and that's why the usage was lower. I think with a course that's all put into Moodle, the usage would be
probably
higher.
would be even greater.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, to point out. So. But so you don't, even if the faculty member has an alternative source, you can still actually use your CMS as well. Some qualitative feedback, and I'll just read these out. Formative midterm feedback I collected from the students showed that they really valued the direct access to the research resources. I hope this year's Bio 3100 offering can be utilized by librarians to widely advertise and highlight the teaching and research resources librarians have to offer to the course curriculum. So that's coming from that faculty member. This course would have been much less useful if not for the time and resources I had to offer to the course. Thank you for your assistance. I showed the students the Moodle editions that night, and they seemed pleased. So that's just some comments from faculty members and their feelings about it. So they found that it was quite useful. And as far as next steps for York, right now the library box is not automatically included in every course at the micro level, and that's what we're working on. So that will, as of September, will be appearing. And we've amalgamated the two boxes, because as you saw before, there was the subject library subject resource box and the static library box, and we've put those two together. So they'll at the top they'll see the library resources by subject, and then they can go on to some of the more general resources. And the next step for me is to work with the liaison librarians in using Moodle and feeling confident in that the online environment and to incorporating the resources there. So that's an ongoing process that we'll be continuing to work on. But the nice thing is that we have our presence in there. They know we're going to be there next year and the year after and the year after. So it's just getting that foot in the door that can be difficult, but it's worthwhile in the end. And now I'm going to pass you over to Bill, and he's going to talk about the development of the portal.
Everything that Sarah said about working with the IT and the other groups, but being prepared and persistent and having things ready counts equally for anything you're doing with portals as well as the course management systems. So bear all that in mind if you're doing anything in your portal. I'm going to show I'll show what our portal looks like and the library's presence there, and then some of the customizations we did, and go into some of the technical details about how we made it work. And I've got a bunch of screenshots I'll run through, but if you want it after when there's some questions, then we could go live into the portal and have a look around. This is, that's the logo there on the left for my.yorku.ca, and it is a one-stop shop where you can access your York email, keep track of dates and times, access course information, review your library account, receive alerts, announcements, events, and news of various sources at York, and much more. That's the standard blurb for the portal. And this is what it looks like. This is what the home page looks like. You can see the tabs across the top: home, courses, library, finances, campus, my stuff, and some of the portlets there. The portal, they started work in 2007, and like I said, there were about a dozen people working on it for a year. It launched in September 2008, and they did a fairly soft launch, pushing it to incoming students. There wasn't a massive all over the campus announcement where they tried to get all 50,000 people using it in one day, but they've been trying to ramp it up, and they're adding things, and over the next couple of years they're planning on, they're hoping that all of the students will start to use it as their regular place to go. There were, aside from the people in IT working on it, there was a student advisory group that had about 30, floating group of about 30 students on it who they used all the way through to find out what was important to have in a portal, kinds of information they wanted, what sorts of user interface, things they liked, testing usability on the new paper prototyping. And there's a portal steering committee too, so people that get together and set some sort of general direction for how the portal works. The tabs on here, you can see in the top left a big announcement, a recent announcement from the university president. Under that, there's some announcements. This is just the top half. It goes down longer. In the middle, York News. This is stuff from Wildlife, which is the student news bulletin. Has things of interest to all the students. And over on the right, a calendar. And there's even you can have a little to-do list, which you can see a hint of down in the bottom right-hand corner. This is the courses tab. Starting on the left, there's a portal that explains what it is. Below that, the exam schedule would be there, but there are no exams scheduled for it right then. This is the Rose Tester, the account that I'm using in here is that Rose Tester is a test account. And you can see her official name is Rose Emily Tester down there, and if she could look at her student profile, see her address, contact information, make sure that was right. Her courses she's in are listed in the middle, GS/. French graduate studies program in French. She's doing a Psych 1010 and Biology 1010. There are some important dates could appear down below that, and then she could click and see her grades over on the right. Skip over the library one just to show you the finances tab. All the her financial information there, if she owed money, it would show up. And the YU card, the student card, is the money you pay for printing, photocopying at the cafeteria, and there are links in there, so she could go add money onto it. This is the campus tab where all of the non-academic stuff goes. You've got, these are basically blog feeds from various sources, from the Career Center, the bookstore, listings of events from our calendar system, and Excalibur over on the bottom right is the student newspaper, so they're links of all their most recent stories. And then there's another tab, My Stuff, which is the place where students can add in anything of their own. They've got some bookmark links, and they could consume any sort of RSS feed from anywhere. So back to the library tab. This is the top half of it. In the top left, there's My Library account, which for this account, there's no, it's just a test account, so there's no activity for it, but I'll show you what mine looks like in a sec. That's where the books checked out, their due date to hold, money that's owed. Below that, the My Research Guide, which is the same information as we saw in the course management system, and I'll explain a bit more about that. Over on the right, there's a big search portlet that has the just a basic catalog search, and you can look up reserved material, do some of the other searches that are there on the library website. Below this, further down, there's the just one of the portlets that about the library tab that explains what's going on here, and the My Librarian portlet where the we suggest, based on what the student's studying, suggest exactly who they should go talk to or what reference desk they should go to if they want to get some special help. And because I'm using a biology example here, or the test again is actually studying, is in the biology program, so ELO shows up again there. And over on the right, the top of that portlet is missing, but that is the library blog, the library news feed, with all of the, where we post things going on in the library. So there are two kinds of portlets that we've got these generic ones, like the blog feed and the search, and then some customized ones. The My Library account, the My Research Guides, and the My Librarian ones. I'll explain a bit about them. This is what the My Library account looks like. It's just got what you'd expect, a list of books you've got checked out, and if you owe money, any holds that you have. Nothing too exciting or surprising about it, but it took a bit of work because we use Unicorn from Circe Dynex, and there was no built-in way to get this information out of the system, so the library IT people had to build a little web service where you say, my student number is this, my library account number is this, and it gives back a bit of XML with all that information in it, and gets formatted in the portlet, and there it is. This is mine. I didn't have any finds, so nothing to show there. So the research guides, these are the six research guides shown for Rose Tester. We saw that she was taking French biology and psychology, so these research guides, it makes sense that she'd see them, the biochemistry, biology, and the others. How do these appear? Why is she seeing these particular ones? These are the courses that she's enrolled in. How we connected things up, we know she's in these courses, we know there are these research guides, we tied them together with metadata in our content management system. We added some metadata to the subject guide saying this content is relevant to students in these courses. This is what the biology research guide looks like in our content management system. And in that button bar, the one, two, three, the fifth one, little tiny button is the Starburst Dublin Core button icon. And if you press that, this would pop up. This, we can associate Dublin Core metadata with everything in our content management system. And we've worked a little scheme. You can see in subject, it says S:AK/bile, S:AS/bile. And so on, and right in the middle, S:SC/bile. And this means that this page is a subject guide of interest to people in anything in AK/bile, which is the Atkinson faculty, the biology program, AS/bile, the arts faculty, the biology program, and so on, and then the SC/bile, the science faculty, biology program. And we have an RSS feed. If you, there's a little web service. If you tell it, you can go to that URL. We'll have this up somewhere. You can follow the links. If you go there and say, give me a list of the subject guides of interest to someone in the science biology program, it will give you back an RSS feed that looks just like this. And if you give it a list, if you say, tell me all the subject guides of interest to someone studying biology, psychology, and French, then it will give you an RSS feed like that on the left with those six guides, and those are exactly the six that show up in the portal, formatted slightly differently. The My Library thing works pretty similarly. That's what we saw in the portal. And here's Elo's librarian profile. We made up little profiles for all the people that want to appear in the portal and for the reference desk, and got little pictures for them. Go to Elo's page and look at the DoubleCore metadata. This time there's an L prefix on everything in there. So she's the librarian, that's what L means, for the GS Bio, Graduate Studies Biology, GS ENVS, Graduate Studies Environmental Studies Program, and all of the other ones. And you can see the L:SC/bio in the middle there. So she's a librarian for anyone studying biology. And in a similar way, on RSS feed, if you tell it there's a student who's in this program or studying this course, then it will give you back an RSS feed of with links. What's going on here? Basically, we have the portal, and there's a content management system. And we've got a web service in front of the content management system. The portal says, I want some information about this. And this web service talks to the content management system, looks around, does a search, what's here in this DC subject field, what's there, and gives an RSS feed back to the portal. And so this is the beginning of a library API, an application programming interface. We're building up little sets of small web-based programs so that can be used or reused anywhere. To push the library's content out into other websites, which is what happened with Moodle. Those subject guides that were listed there, well, we knew that we had these subject guide listings going on working for the portal, and then when they wanted to get them into Moodle, there were some questions, could it be done, would it be a bit of work, and all I had to do was give someone the URL of the RSS feed, and they just plugged it in and it worked because of some stuff that I haven't got into about how York's infrastructure and a single sign-on system, there's a bit of magic to it, but it just worked, and so we could reuse that in the anywhere else, around anything in York. The idea for this too, I must say, was using the Dublin Core metadata was thought up by Tuan Nguyen, who's the director, who's the manager of the library, way manager of the library's IT division. He does the service and software. It's a really nice way of designing things. Some stuff about the, a bit of information about the analytics of the popularity of all of this. This is the popularity of the portal. Overall, for everything on the portal from September 2008 up to a few days ago, you can see that first big spike is in September when they launched it to everyone, and there's a second spike in February, which is when our strike ended, and after 11 weeks, all the students came back. And the library tab, big spike when things launched, and some fairly steady activity since then, but 28,000 page views from about 22,000 students, and some of whom, so many students have never looked at it. Most have looked at it once, but there are a number who use it fairly regularly. And there's just some plans for what is going to be happening with the portal around New York. There's be more stuff happening this year and future plans for expanding it, especially to potential incoming students. So they're gonna make it so that when a student applies to York, then they get an account on a special potential student portal. So now I'll hand things back over to Sarah.
So this is just a little conclusionary note. York Advance, they did a study and they surveyed 159 e-learning librarians like myself and distance learning librarians about what are the best practices when you're entering these outside environments such as portals and CMSs, and these were the seven ones that they came up with, and I completely agree. Number one was know your CMS portal and its administrators. Number two, get a library link in there. Number three, go beyond that link, start looking at other ways. Number four, don't overextend yourself. Make sure you recruit some help. And Bill and I are standing up here as presenters, but we're not. We didn't do this alone. We had committees that were supporting us, and we also worked, as I said, with different departments. Our IT department in the library was a great help as well. Be strategic with your time and course selection. Make sure that you're using those early adopters, those people who are excited, energetic about new technology and its use. Be an active participant in the class, and what that means, that's referring to specifically in a CMS. Make sure that if you are the librarian associated with that course, that you check in. You don't just do one-off session and then just leave it for the next few weeks. That you actually make sure you see, find out if there are questions being asked. If there aren't questions being asked, or you see students sort of spinning their wheels on a topic, you can always put yourself in there and say, actually, there's a really great book, or there's a really great online resource that will help you with that and deal with that problem. That can be really helpful. And again, market your service. People have to know that you're going to provide this for them, that you're doing this. Faculty members work in those silos, and it's making sure that you're out there and people know what can be done. And these were questions we were going to ask you, but I'm afraid we ran a little over time. So I wanted just to open the floor. Were there any questions or comments or things that you, other successes or experiences that you wanted to share with us? Yes.
I was just wondering why you chose.
Pardon?
Why did York choose Moodle?
It was partly cost. We were with WebCT before, and it was going to be really expensive to go to the next upgrade. I think it has to do with the pricing of it, and we have 50,000 students. So, we felt the general consensus was, well, if we could go with something that we didn't have to pay so much for every single year, but we could do some in-house development on it. And our faculty support center are really great at doing that, and they're enthusiastic about it. So that was the reason we made that switch. We didn't at the library really have it much. We didn't have any control or even input on it. It was just a decision that was made, but we had to run with it. So we did. Any other questions? Yeah.
How do you envision this coexisting with the library website?
How does it coexist with the library website?
Eventually.
Actually, yeah, that's a really good question. That was what we've discussed this in our committees. The reason that we use links and that kind of thing rather than hosting exact information in the portal, and if anything in the portal and anything that you saw in the CMS, all links back out to our webpage. So if we make a change in our webpage, that change is then reflected in the course, in the individual course, and in the actual page. So if we're actually going to, with a new discovery layer, now that'll be reflected so the students can go back and use that search in that new discovery layer. And as soon as you search in that box that says search the catalog, you're out into the library website. So then it kind of pushes them out to the library website and it connects the two that way. If Elo wants to change her profile, she does that through the content management system, and then it's automatically updated through RSS feeds. That was our reasoning behind it. So it works. It seems to be working well right now that way. Yes.
One of the questions we have in my institution, we're using Blackboard, is we do very specialized course pages. So I was noticing for you, yes, you're registered in biology, so it takes you to the biological sciences subject guide. Actually go one step further and say, okay, for geology 479, which is a paleontology course, you're probably going to look at biosis instead of GRS. So I'm going to put this biosis is you're doing a base
that course.
Geoscience, so.
We do actually do
those.
I skipped over that.
We didn't show that.
I didn't show that.
The amount of time
I forgot
we had.
To mention that I was skipping over. But we have those, so we'd have them for a Psych 10 Tanner Geology 3000 or whatever. But the same way that all the other stuff works with those course guides, and so they appear with the research guides in general and the specific. But for those courses that have one static web page, but if there are the courses that have the Moodle content in them, doesn't show up in the portal or on the library website, so that is unlinked and not connected yet. Though one of the things that we're working on in the portal is mixing up the bringing all the Moodle stuff into the portal, so that if there are new things for students or new assignments or any new content added, then they can see it in there. So there'd be all the back and forth.
So they do feed them. We're finding that one of the problems is keeping those up to date, all those course ones, and so we went through a huge cleanup of them. So it ended up that there's not that many. So, but we do feed them in, and they'll show up at the top actually, and then underneath will come any other subject guides that might be applicable. And it kind of also deals with the interdisciplinarity of the subjects too. So it's nice to have those other research guides in case the students may be in education, but wanting to do something in the field of science, so they might see that guide as well. So, good question though. Yes?
Can you talk I know that we're running out of time, but I'm embedded in a couple of courses, and I'm kind of selfish with my time. I don't really want to work 7 days a week. So
right.
And
why not?
They're usually, they're working in the evenings and weekends, so how do you manage that? How often are you checking in?
How often do I check in? I check in constantly. That's my problem.
So you do work 7 days.
That's it. I'm afraid I do. And that's just because I'm curious and interested, and I like to respond to them. But I know sometimes I'm like, oh, it's Saturday afternoon. I probably should just put it away. But that's one of the things, one of the seven tenets is just be careful of overextending yourself, because you can constantly be answering questions. And that's where and I've been talking with my colleagues about this as well, that I can't be in, and I'm not the expert in biology, so I don't really want to be answering those questions. So it needs to be the other liaison librarians that are taking up taking this up as well, and there are concerns about time and that kind of thing, but I'm sure everybody's sort of seen this a little bit decline in our reference questions. But if we're in the content management system and are answering those questions, we have to count those as reference as well. So I think that we have to start relooking at how we're doing our reference and our jobs that way. So I think that we need to share the load. Really, it can't just be those people who are interested in it. It needs to be everybody.
Can I ask, do you have any agreements about how quickly you'd respond to people? Like, we'll get back to you in edit one day or?
I just started in January, so okay. I do try to check in every day. But, that means that I'm working like 5 days a week and then checking in the evenings and weekends. And
yeah.
I can see that I'm only in two courses right now, but I can see that could be very time.
Yeah, if you're in a
I'm just saying, I only tend to do it like because I'm involved in a couple of assignments. So I check kind of at the beginning of the assignment, in the middle, and at the end of the assignment, I'm pretty much checking every day about 3 to 4 days before the assignment's actually due. So that's when all the stuff is. And also said that pays to know your instructor because I've got other things related to the instructor. So if there's a library question, it's kind of often.
Yeah.
So, most of the time it's
Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
But,
you can also have another solution is to have a separate email address, so that and you can have the forum feeds going to that email address as well. So it can help for sorting things out. And I'm aware of time, so this is our contact information. We will be posting this presentation, and we actually did record it as well. So we'll be posting the audio and the visuals definitely in our own repository at York. So that's DSpace, and you can have a look for it there. But we'll also be posting it on the CLA website as well. So thank you very much for coming, and enjoy the rest of your day.